Thanks for downloading this episode of the Simcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching for the Simcast wherever they get their podcasts. The Simcast on RS1.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Simcast. I almost forgot the name of my own show. It is episode 33, the 31st of August in the year of our Emperor 2023. Now, Steve's going to correct me. M2. There we go. Only 38K more to go. I'm Matt Hunter, as you may say. That's a very deep cut for some very nerdy stuff going on there, which, if you've been listening to me and Stephen for long enough, you'd be getting a grasp of. Alongside me, as ever, is Mr. Steve Wilkinson. Hello, Steve.
Hello.
How are we doing, young sir?
I'm well. I'm very well.
Have you looked out of your window and noticed that it's two things? Firstly, it might be a bit different for you. It's not bakingly hot like it was the last time we did one of these,
and it's not raining either.
Exactly, it's that wonderful thing. It's that wonderful weather that Britain does so well. Nothing.
But the lights are drawing in now. I have noticed.
I know. It's awesome. It makes me so happy. Anyway, joining us tonight is a very very long-standing friend of Torah, actually, and someone who I've been trying to get on the show, whether he knows it or not, for an extortionately long time. Rob Ladbrook, welcome to Simcast.
Ah, hello, gentlemen. How are we doing?
We are all fine. And while we're actually... One thing, Rob, you may or may not know about the show, is we'd like to segue off. We may say Simcast at the top, but the amount of sim racing we actually talk about on the British show is slim, shall we say?
Not race descriptions, then.
It's just nice to have a chat sometimes, and that's what.
Well, why not?
Exactly. So, whilst we will be talking about obviously the SRO esports, hopefully at some point, we'd like people to get to know you and get to know your passion for motorsport, which I think is.
I wouldn't wish that on anyone. There's enough people in media centres up and down the country in Europe that have to suffer me anyway. Podcasts were a safe place.
No. It's a Simcast, nowhere safe. So, well, I mean, let's start from the very beginning. What got you into motorsport in the first instance?
Oh, complete and utter accident, if you must know. in truth, I was at university actually studying an English degree. Because I didn't really know what to do with my life back then. I basically paid my way through university by working in high-class or high-end fashion retail, which basically boiled down to selling overpriced suits to footballers. I didn't quite see that being kind of the rest of my life. So I did an English degree because I've always liked to write and bits like that. And actually, I was chasing a road car position with either Autocar or Auto Express or Top Gear, but everyone who ever wants to be a car journalist is emailing those people nonstop throughout their teenagers and their early 20s. So you never get a reply. And one day I bought a copy of Autosport because some bloke called Lewis Hamilton was on the front and they did a very nice green cover. And I thought, well, this is quite interesting. I'll learn a bit about this. I sent an email off to the then editor, Damien Smith. He offered me a week's worth of work experience, and I ended up staying for about 7 months.
Nice.
Slightly longer than a week.
Yeah, slightly longer than a week. Yes, absolutely.
But did they know you were still there?
No. They've got very accommodating cupboards. Very accommodating cupboards. And if you keep your voice down, you can even sneak into the canteen occasionally. So it's not too bad. But yeah, from then on, I worked on Motorsport News, was managing editor of that, looked after the national section of Autosport, was heavily involved in Motorsport magazine and still am. And then I launched my own kind of media company in January 2020, which was perfect timing to go self-employed. It was the best Yeah, and since then, I've kind of made a career of following GT racing around any and every track where there are GT racings, whether it's GT4, GT3, a mixture of the two. Yeah, and that basically kind of brings me to where I am today. Some 20 years after first discovering the British GT Championship, I'm still there.
God, you make me feel old.
Like, they've not found scissors big enough to cut me off the press list yet.
I think it's one of it's one of those funny things, isn't it? Because I think, from the start, GT racing, what a terrible time to get involved in that. I mean, goodness me, what were you thinking, man?
I know, awful, isn't it? I mean, it's so dull compared to Formula One. you just got to, you know, GT racing, the way I look at it, it's the cars that were on all of the posters on my bedroom wall when I was a kid. Going hammer and tongs for... And some people don't get endurance racing. I completely get that some people don't get endurance racing. But there's a certain magic over any kind of sports car race that's kind of 4, 6, 12, 10, 24 hours. You do get into it and it does become absorbing. That's what I've always found anyway. It very much kind of does it more for me than a 2-hour Grand Prix. And I worked in Formula One for a fair amount of years. But I do personally get a lot more enjoyment out of the GT side of things.
I always used to say GT racing, particularly the longer endurance ones, it's one of those brilliant types of sports where you put it on the background and you go, it's absolutely fine, darling. I'll just have a background. It's a 24-hour race. I can come away and do the lawnmower. I can come away and do the housework stuff. And I'll come back and it'll be absolutely fine. And then neither of you move from your seat for like 6 hours.
Oh, the thing I find with Le Mans, I do this every year with Le Mans. I go, I'll just watch the start and then I'll go and fire the barbecue up or something.
Yeah,
and I burn through 8 iPad batteries or something daft like that. And before I know it, I'm sat square-eyed at 2 o'clock in the morning watching it on my phone in bed when I know I should be asleep. But you just, you know, you think, oh, I'll go to sleep now. Either that or then you wake up and the first thing you do is check Twitter or X, sorry, Elon, for your updates, and get straight back into it again. And then there's that kind of horrible post-race feeling where you count down the final few hours and you go, oh, there's only 2 hours left of this. There's only 90 minutes left of this. That's just a football match. I watch those all the time. This is not a problem. We can make it. Then you get to the end and there's this sudden feeling of kind of emptiness of where's it gone and bring it back.
Says, I mean, I'd say between the actually you and Steve have got a lot in common in terms of 24-hour races that you've been to, Spa in particular. I've only obviously been to Le Mans once, but yes, the emptiness and, as I called it, the post endurance hangover is a very, very real thing.
Oh, it is, yeah, 100%. 100%. Although I think we'll be absolutely fine come next year if you look at the various SRO and ACO calendars, because I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, we've got the Nürburgring 24 hours, we've got the Spa 24 hours, and we've got Le Mans all within the same month, I believe.
Goodness,
that's going to be intense.
It's going to be very intense, because obviously the Nürburgring 24 hours is now a counting round of the Intercontinental GT Challenge.
How cool is that?
It's brilliant. It's going to be great. And the best thing about that is a lot of people jumped on the bandwagon of, oh, we want the N24 to stay as it is. We don't want the disruption of... But actually, it won't change anything. Having the IGTC as a part of it, the manufacturers still nominate their cars. They can use whatever cars they want. So, I mean, if manufacturers had just said we'd like those three cars to score points this year, then, you know, it will run... almost indistinguished from how it used to run. So actually it will only add to it, because it will just add a bit more quality to the field. Perhaps not saying the field is lacking quality anyway, it's incredible. But I just think, you know, it's going to be the garnish on it, I think, because it's a wonderful event and it's easily the craziest event I've ever watched trackside.
It's one I've actually never been to.
The local wildlife out there is.
That's
wild.
I've always wanted to go with, like, just walk while the 24 hours is on, just walk anti-clockwise to the circuit, just do one lap of the whole thing in the race.
Bonkers. It's bonkers.
And just see the wildlife.
Oh, it's brilliant. It's amazing. They go for it like no race I've ever been to. The mix of kind of clash of cultures and everything else at the N24 is something quite special. It really is.
What I love to see was those pictures from like the day after the race, and every campsite is utterly spotless. I mean,
yeah, there is a lot of that.
Can you ever imagine that being the case at the case at like Glastonbury or Reading and Leeds and stuff? That just wouldn't happen. But
yeah,
it blows my mind when you think how long they're there for and just how many kegs have been consumed by, you know, a not an insignificant number of people.
I just always remember. I think we were somewhere. We'd gone around to somewhere near Adnow, I believe, to watch, and it was probably about 11 o'clock at night, and there was quite a large group of German fans, and they brought a couple of ex-military, just like high top trucks, like the troop transporters, and they parked them kind of nose to nose and put planks all around the top to make their own kind of viewing gantry. And then on top of it, they put kind of a three-seater sofa and an armchair. And I remember walking past and saying, those look quite old-fashioned. They look like the kind of thing you'd find in your nan's house. So we went back there the next morning, and sure enough, the next afternoon after the race, because we were just taking a tour of the track, basically. And they were there, and they were taking it all down. And I looked at them, and they spoke English. And I kind of said to them, I said, you know, are you planning to leave the sofas here, lads, or anything like that? And honest to God, they looked at me and kind of went, why would we leave the sofas? I need to get them back to my grandmother's house. And it was completely bang on. It's like, okay.
That's epic.
It's like, you do, lads.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, you know, they were the most comfortable people at the Nordschleife, I believe.
So I don't know if you'll remember this, Steve. When we were at Le Mans, we were spent a lot of the time sat on the pit garage roof for the kart track.
Oh, obviously. Yes, yeah.
Yeah. And on the opposite side, there was some guy. It was some guys. Well, it was a V-dub transporter type thing. And they'd set up, you know, the scaffolding on top and a couple of sofas on top of that. And they were trying to find the right position. And there was a couple of them sat on top of it, as obviously one was driving and they were calling down to him. And it was going really, really well until they hit some low branches of a tree. A tree.
Oh,
he just sort of sat on the opposite side of the track, just going, they're going to hit that tree now. It's just going to watch the car accident in slow motion.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I mean, so you sort of touched on the SRO link to that thing. And I think you're right, because I can't see it making a huge amount of difference, because a lot of the guys who race in that anyway race in the SRO series anyway, as do the teams, do they not? So
there's quite a lot of crossover, but I think there's more kind of circuit specialists, I believe, at the N24. You will get your Black Falcons or teams like that. Manti as well, obviously, with a massive presence. I know they do Spa every year as well, but in terms of actual regulars in GT World Challenge, not so much in recent years. They very much kind of save it for the, I keep wanting to call it VLN, but I think it's NLS now, isn't it? I think it's NLS. Yeah. They've changed it to now.
I keep calling it VLN.
Well, because when they had,
well, it's hard to get out of old habits, right? It's still the Eiffel Redden in many ways, isn't it?
Because when they had the virtual series over COVID, I don't think they could have called it the VVLNS, because that would be...
yeah. Dear me, I don't know. But yeah, no, I think having the N24 as a round will only be good for the N24. I think it will actually give it a bit more international recognition, which it absolutely deserves. It does deserve to be put on an endurance racing plinth with the likes of Daytona and Le Mans and Spa. 100% it does.
Because I think that's the thing. I think it's almost... I mean, I may not be quite getting this right, but it's almost one of the very last remaining if you know, you know events that's left.
It's almost like... it's like a microcosm of how the sport was but it's still going in the modern era. Because sometimes you look at it and you go, how can a Peugeot 205 be allowed to be on the same track as a GT3 car that's so much faster, almost 100 mile an hour difference?
Well, Manta Foxtail, for goodness sake. Yeah, you wouldn't get that anywhere else.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, where else does it happen? I mean, every kind of fibre of your being goes, how is this still allowed?
Mm.
And it's probably still allowed because it is almost like a dirty little endurance racing secret. And I think that adds to the appeal of the event massively. And hopefully it always can continue that way. Certainly being part of RGTC won't change that. I'm massively looking forward to seeing what it's going to do for next year.
Because I think for me, we'll move on to some other bits in a minute, but for me, the when you see the grid, just the grid before the start, and you see everybody on the grid, you just think, there's a track in there somewhere. But I cannot think of another start line in the world, not even Le Mans, I don't think, kind of looks as full as that. As the N20, as Nürburgring before the start of the race, it's just something else.
It is bizarre. It's I can't remember how many cars started this year's race, but it was certainly well into three figures. But I remember, I think the first N24 I ever went to was Chex's Bookshelf, 2010, I believe, and I watched that from the start of the timing tower. On the pit lane bit, and it's a beautiful panoramic view up there. You can see the castle, the old 12th century castle, and you can see the cars kind of threading through onto the Grand Prix bit to make the start. And you're watching them, and the leaders go through, and they go through the first sector, and you can kind of see them just to the point where they start to dive down the hill towards the hairpin. And then you look back, and they're still coming out of the Nordschleife to take the start at that point, which is just... It beggars belief, the popularity of that thing and the diversity of it. It's amazing.
That's absolutely make me smile, that place. And I mean, another place that makes me smile, we sort of alluded to it earlier, is Spa. I hold my hands up. I've only been there for the Grand Prix, which Kel Surprise was wet-ish.
Please tell me it lasted more than three laps.
It did. Although that was the year Button got taken out by Vettel at the bus stop right in front of us. That was not a great moment. Spa's a funny one for me because, of course, it too has, you know, incredible history. I mean, let's face it, it's probably, for people of our age, it's probably home to one of the greatest Formula One races I can remember. 1998, for those listening who may not know what the hell I'm talking about. Other years are available. But it, even with its changes over the last couple of years, I think it's safe to say it's not a circuit that doesn't still have its issues. And the rain thing is clearly a thing. We can't do anything about the weather, but do you think it's ever a circuit that's ever going to be just going to be disappeared? Do you think it's safe?
I mean, purely personal opinion, I love Spa. I always will love Spa. I know it's had its issues and its detractors. I'm not really sure what more you can do to it, to be honest. Because the sport's never going to be 100% safe.
Mm.
And the accidents that tragically took place this year was a different type of accident to the one that took place in Formula 2 a few years before. It was not a fault of the circuit. It could have happened on any straight in the world at any point. I adore Spa. Is it the safest track in the world? No. What else can you do to it? Surely part of its sheer nature is the fact that it's a challenge and it's a bit scary. Otherwise you have a kind of sanitized circuit, which most drivers won't like. Most fans won't like. So it's a difficult mix. It is a difficult mix. I don't really know what you do. You just, yeah.
But I mean, the flip to that is some of the changes they have made have been, let's face it, absolutely superb from a spectator point of view. That new grandstand at, now is it Eau Rouge or is it Radeon, actually?
It's both. It's huge. it basically overlooks the two, and it is a stunning, it's a stunning thing. The view from there, I've been up there and done some filming a few times since they've done it, and yeah, it's a beautiful thing. It really is. Although if you have vertigo, do not walk along the front of it, because all of the support struts are underneath. They're under the kind of lip of the structure. So it's just a sheer drop. You can't see anything below you. So if you have vertigo, especially with the glass fence that they've put around it, which just really helps. Great for fan visibility, but it does make your legs a little bit wobbly, I will say.
Steve, want to go back?
Yes, I do. I haven't been to Spa since 2018 or 2019. I can't remember.
Was that the year you nearly got run over by the Bentley? No.
Yes.
Yes. There's a story there.
Ah, there's okay.
Rob, there's a video.
Here's where we insert jokes about Bentley being the largest GT3 car to ever exist, and actually you were in the grandstand at the time when this thing was going round.
Yeah, I was actually at Stavolo in the pub, like in the bar, and it was the driver parade where they drive the cars down to Spa.
Yep.
And had and behold, me and my dad, we'd cycled down from basically the circuit down to the one of the roads outside Spa and everything. We'd had a fair odd amount of units, so we were a bit confident on the old, like, getting some
as is easy to do at Spa, let's be honest.
It is very easy to do. And so the lead cars come through, you've got all the circuit cars coming through. We're like, oh, that's fine, they're not going that fast. Some of the Porsches come through, yeah, okay, they're in the middle of the road. And then the GT and Bentley comes through from Team Parker Racing, absolutely lights it up. And I'm like, I'm about 2 foot in the road here, and I'm going to take a slight step back. And I'm fairly confident I was about 6 inches away from the front headlight of that. Yeah, it was good fun.
Story to tell your grandkids.
Yeah, it's when you fall in love with motorsport even more. And that's like, yep, this is where I nearly got killed. And that's, yep, that'll do. That'll do it.
Yeah, mate. It is special when the race cars go into Spa Town Centre, though. That really is kind of taking sport to the people for around just a few hours. It's always electric. And Spa Town Centre, you cannot move for people.
It is amazing. And
it's brilliant.
I prefer, it's a bit controversial, but I prefer Spa 24 Hours to Le Mans just through.
Ooh, interesting.
And I've been to both many times as well, but I just prefer it for the accessibility that you can have. I know you can go into the pit lane at Le Mans on the Tuesday, or you used to be able to, but it's just the fact of it just seems more like fan orientated rather than a bit more clinical than what Le Mans is getting now, in my opinion.
Yeah, I kind of know what you mean. I mean, Le Mans does a lot with the driver parade and the public scrutineering and all that kind of stuff as well. But the things I find it difficult to compare the two events, really, because the only similarity they've got is their 24-hour races in Central Europe.
I do agree with that.
Other than that, you've got the kind of incredible mix of classes, because let's not forget that Spa is the world's biggest GT3 race. It's just for GT3s. You have the mix of driver abilities, but the fact that Le Mans has got the prototypes with the GTs, with the LMP2s, so you've kind of always got this pro and am and the different engineering, and I just it's a whole different animal. I mean, I adore Le Mans as well, absolutely do. 2015 was just such a classic year for Le Mans, the height of kind of LMP1 powers, and obviously following on from the diesel wars of everyone trying to turbo boost the life out of TDI engines. But it's wonderful, you know, the level of innovation and some of the complete random things that come out of Le Mans history, which you don't, you know, since Spa is not a touring car race anymore, it's a GT3 race, you know, it follows a strict set of rules. You can't turn up with a brand new front experimental front splitter on your Porsche, for example. So you do get quite a lot of difference, I think. I find it difficult to compare the two. I just think endurance racing is what they have in common. But other than that, they're two really, really different experiences. But I know what you mean. Spa does, in a way, feel more accessible.
Mm. It's, also just, but, sorry, go on, Steve.
Yeah, it's just one of those weird things where, like, at Spa, I felt more at home, even though I, like, everyone else loves Le Mans and everything. It's just, you just feel more, I don't know, traditional? But then Le Mans,
yeah, I know what you mean. I think a permanent circuit does that for you, though. I think that's probably the difference, because you're going to see more at Spa and you know more of the Spa track because it's the Spa track. It's, you know, what we all grew up watching Formula One in the 90s or the 80s, or even if you go back to the old circuit, there are still echoes of it around. Whereas obviously the Le Mans track, massive, huge, and half of it's public highway for most of the time. So it doesn't look like a track in quite a lot of places. So I do wonder if that familiarity comes from it being held on the circuit rather than kind of the old roads around Stavelo or anything like that.
Well, let's look forward to some more. I'll just keep talking about GTs, to be honest. It's just
and fun. If you want,
let's just do it. It's fun.
I'm fine with this.
I think we're all fine with this. The summer break is finally coming to an end, thank goodness. Are you off to Hockenheim?
I'm not going to Hockenheim, no.
Oh.
Barcelona at the end. It's the endurance ones that I follow, mostly. Purely because that's where the eSports is. Nice little drop there for the Fanatec Arena.
There we go.
Obviously follows the... Let me get this right. Fanatec GT World Challenge Europe Endurance Cup, powered by AWS.
Good God, he did it first time.
Yeah,
we've had drivers from the... I'm not going to be horrible, but we've had drivers from the series who haven't got that right first time, so congrats.
I've had to write it in many, many a press release.
It's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it?
It is.
But it does have that... I mean, we'll just swing it, veer it wildly back towards sim racing. It does have that... Fanatec branding in it, of course.
Absolutely.
I think it's safe to say I think the SRO probably jumped on the eSports wagon first. I don't even have to guess that. I'm pretty certain I know that that's true. And they seem to have thoroughly embraced it. Bear in mind, we have Fanatec as a title sponsor for basically all of their series. What's it been like from your side, seeing how they've moved the esports?
I mean, it's huge. I mean, frankly, I mean, this was my first year kind of looking after the media coverage for the SRO esports. Mm. And actually, I'm kind of taken aback by how big it is. I mean, the sheer kind of numbers of everything, or just from the SRO series, you've got the multitude of online series. We had two different championships within the Fanatec Arena, which anyone that's been to a GT World Challenge event or the Endurance Cup events, you can't fail to notice the Fanatec Arena. It's huge. It's a palatial kind of... I hate to use the word put me up because it takes them a week and God knows how many people, and it weighs something like 100 tons. So it's not a moment's work to put it up and fold it back down again. But with 24 fully operating Fanatec sim rigs in there, all running Assetto Corsa Competizione. And then we've got the Fanatec Esports GT Pro Series, which is the first esports event of the weekend, and usually actually the first competitive event of the entire weekend, because the GT World Challenge drivers, the real world ones, go in and fight for their handful of real world points towards the team's championship for that. And that's obviously all got to be decided before the real world GT3 championship happens, because those points need to be allocated in advance. And then usually before the GT3 race, or sometimes during, We then have the Sim Pro series, which is for the professional teams and online drivers to come and try their hand in a kind of competitive event. It all becomes a bit gladiatorial for that one. It's really interesting to watch the kind of dynamic and the tension, because towards the races are only an hour long in the arena. But I think it was at Spa when we were kind of nudging on 30 degrees outside, and it was hideously hot inside the arena because everyone's trying so hard you don't realise quite how much these guys are sweating, literally through gloves and through boots, just fighting for every single inch because there's so much on the line. It's not just pride. I mean, this year, I believe in total, across all the SRO esports competition, there's over €400,000 of prize money on the line. And that's not chump change, you know? Mm. Winning a single race in the arena can earn you 10, 15, 20,000 euros. It's serious business.
It's a hell of a commitment. And the fact that Thomas Jacquemyre races in, well, it's GT, oh, it's the GT2, but the fact that he's out on track as well, bits and bobs, because I think he debuted the Mercedes, didn't he, at Monza? I think that's correct.
I believe so. Yeah, the AMG GT2. Wonderful looking thing. Sounds even better than it looks.
Just wish it had the GT3 front, the GT3 face, to be honest. But
then it would look like a GT3 car.
Well, it would, but you know, mind you, the new, as a complete aside, the new one that Mercedes have just launched does actually have that face. So I'm just like, it's not the race car.
I'm glad that we've seen a new Mercedes AMG coupe come out, because I know Mercedes are keen to continue doing the GT3 customer racing stuff, but it was always up in the air that when the AMG GT finally does get mothballed away, what do you use? You know, are they going to go the BMW route and maybe put a C63 out, so we actually have this kind of touring car GT3 thing going on with the M4? But it looks like that's going to be the strong contender, and I think it will look fantastic. I mean, you know, I am a dyed in the wool fan of the AMG GT3. It is by far my personal favorite. Just because of the way it looks and the way it sounds. It's just, I love those things. They're really good. So I'm pleased to see another AMG GT around. I think that's good news for the future when the new car could come on stream sometime around 2025, I believe, that the that's current actually, ones homologated until.
That's not that far, really.
It's not. Goes quickly.
I mean, just because you said sounds great, I mean, I would 100% agree to you, but there's unfortunately a contender from America which may steal my attention.
That's if we get any.
Well,
will they come along? Will they? I would love to see one, but will they? Not.
I bet they will. Well, my dream is that Academy, Academy, is it Academy? Yeah, the running in British GT would take some. That would be epic.
Ah, hang on, you're speaking about the Ford. I thought you were talking about the Corvette.
Oh, that too. Yeah, no, I'm a Mustang man.
It's a big American V8 love in here.
Yeah. No, I'd forgotten about the Corvette.
Wonderful looking thing.
Because of course that's
properly fantastic.
That's got its eyes on, I don't even know what the class is going to be called. GT3 at Le Mans is what I'm going to have to call it.
Yeah.
LMGT3, is that what it is?
Something like that.
Something like that. With its special bespoke pack, which makes it somewhat different to the SRO GT3 homologation, but no doubt is basically exactly the same.
Yeah, I think I would love to see those in GT World Challenge and bits like that, but I do wonder if they might just stick IMSA and Le Mans, but I would love to see them come to...
Sorry, dear listener. This is complete GT loving, and I make no apologies for it. I would entirely agree with you, but for the existence of the Intercontinental GT Challenge powered by Pirelli.
I forgot the powered by Pirelli. Shame on me. You've been on the website. Admit it. You're on Google right now.
I am on the website. It's true. But consider, because. My argument would be they wouldn't come to Europe because the market isn't necessarily here. but the market globally would make more sense to them. Maybe that's an argument we can have, you know, that would draw them in.
Quite possibly. But, I mean, all it takes is an ambitious customer.
I mean, they're doing a race at Indy, for goodness sake. I mean, yeah, what more do you want?
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, that Mustang. Sorry, no, I need that in my life. That is especially
that's a good looking thing as well. We had that at Spa. That was on display at Spa alongside the new GT4 car, which also looks great. But yeah, we'll see. Matt Nicol Jones, if you're listening, get your checkbook out, mate. We could use with the GT3 alongside a couple of GT4s.
I mean, just very quickly, let's touch on British GT, because how can we not have talked about British GT? You know, the series that Toro ran for God knows how many years.
There's a British GT Championship?
Apparently, I don't know who knew. intelligent money, British GT Championship. I'm going to hold my hand up and say, shame on me, I haven't actually managed to watch an awful lot of it this year, which is terrible.
You've been missing out.
I feel like I have, if I'm honest. It especially the fact that you got to go to the Algarve.
Oh, that was fun. That is a wonderful circuit for anyone that hasn't been. Algarve is right up there with my favourites. Really, really good. Wonderful facilities. The climate out there is really good as well, actually, because despite the fact we went out there fearing an absolute European heat wave, fortunately the Algarve escaped the terrible temperatures that were racking Italy and Spain, because obviously we're further down and further to the coast. So I think we were kind of low 30s, but because of its seaside location, there was always this breeze that was just keeping everything manageable. So, but aside from that, what a track. It's brilliant. It's such a lovely, loads of elevation changes, loads of places to overtake. Highly recommend. Big fan of the Algarve. I wish we were going back, actually.
I'll tell you why. One of the reasons why I perhaps haven't. And it's a subconscious. It's a subconscious thing for me. Not enough Astons.
Well, we had two in. Yeah, we had two at the Algarve, Beach Dean and Ninjuro.
Not enough Astons. Where's TF? Come on.
Well, they're currently doing very well in America.
They're doing pretty well.
And Europe as well, to be fair. So
they're doing pretty well elsewhere. What I will say, though, that Steph pointed out, the driver lineups that are now in this series it took me back to kind of the height of super touring in terms of the names that the series is now attracting.
This year's entry list is insane.
Because it is fundamentally it's fundamentally works drivers through and through. And the quality afforded to it as well. The cars, the teams that are involved in it, I joke about not enough Astons and stuff, but everything that is there is absolutely bang on, and it's the healthiest I think I've seen British GT in quite some time.
I mean, in terms of numbers, that the kind of, if you're talking just about how many cars on the grid and bits, British GT's been sold out for the last handful of years, which has always been a great sign. But I think this year, just the addition of Raffaele Marcello, Jules Gounon, obviously there last year, but not for the entire championship. I know he's missed one round this year, but he's been at pretty much every other one. The level of quality is astronomic. And it has shown in the racing. You know, it's been really good. You've got Johnny Adam, you've got Jules Gounon, you've got Marcus Clutton's up there as a highly underrated driver. Ross Gunn, Sandy Mitchell, Dan Harper in the BMW has been sensational this year. Marvin Kirchhoffer for Garage 59 has been brilliant. And then you've got kind of the household names like Rob Bell in there as well, Martin Plowman. Of course, won Le Mans on his only attempt in LMP2. Nice little fact there. But it's fantastic. It really is. For a national championship, it's outrageous, really, when you think about it. You've got these international works drivers, these kind of heroes of their sport, coming along to race at Little Alton Park. you know, and Snetterton. And it's wonderful. I know Raffaele Marcello hadn't seen Alton Park or Snetterton before he actually turned up on the Friday. but either of them, and was ballistic at both, because that's what Lello does. So it's quite amazing sometimes. I remember watching a qualifying session for British GT at Rockingham in probably, I think it was like 2009. And we had I think that was pre-Johnny Adam. So we would have had kind of Phil Keane. I think we would have had Joe Osborne hanging around in a Ginetta, Alex Mortimer, all those kind of Richard Westbrook, I think, was on the grid. And you remember looking at qualifying and going, oh, it can't get better than this. I mean, I won't say it's better, but it's different. It's progress.
Yeah. One thing, now here is a controversial point. We will move on to, I promised to listen, there is a little bit of sim racing news we'll move on to in a little bit.
We already spoke about SRO Esports.
Yeah, we did, it's true. We've covered ourselves. Perhaps a controversial point. I would argue in its current iteration and with the strength of the drivers that are coming over to it with the manufacturer backing in, you know, not necessarily in name, obviously, because it's not a manufacturer series. I would argue it's better than the BTCC at the minute in terms of the quality of what's on the track.
I'd agree with that.
Might be a controversial call, but that's certainly how I feel about it at the moment, particularly as of course, the Ginetta package has also moved, quite logically in my mind, from the Touring Car pack over to British GT.
I'd agree with that.
And I know you're not going to possibly comment on that, Ruckus.
I say nothing. I love touring cars too.
it's a bit like, so when the WEC was coming to Silverstone, and when it was
the Le Mans series, wasn't it?
Yeah, Le Mans series, then ILMC, and then the WEC and stuff. And it came to Silverstone, and it was Le Mans standard racing at Silverstone. Not so many people through the door. And then a certain Mark Webber showed up, and then quite a lot more people started showing up. And then a certain Fernando Alonso and a Jenson Button started showing up, and more people started coming. Until obviously they don't go anymore. But I remember being really grumpy that I was walking around and I couldn't just go to the normal spots I'd go and I could take my photos because there'd be no bugger there. And then there really, really was. And it's how I feel when I go to touring cars, because I can take all the photos I want on the Saturday because it's usually quite quiet, and then you turn up on the Sunday and it's ram packed. And
how dare these people turn up to enjoy the
sport? I know, there's a little very selfish part of my mind that goes, I love how successful British GT is being, but can it stay at this level of successful and not get too much successful so that I can still take photos without having to barge through people?
Well, we've had Jenson Button once. Yes. We've not had a full season entry from him yet. You never know. You do never know. Still got a team. But yeah, I mean, you know, British GT has enjoyed a couple of absolute golden years, and it's been a privilege to be a part of it. And, you know, hopefully I will get to be a part of it for a long time beyond that. I mean, touring cars is still quite a phenomenal show as well when you think about the actual package and the presentation of it. It's still, you know, it still gets enormous crowds. It still gets really good racing. Is the racing as good with the hybrids compared to the old Success Ballast system? Personally, I'm not sure. Maybe it has suffered a little bit from that, but I'm sure they'll work it out. Whereas kind of the British GT formula of adding the extra seconds on at the pit stop does seem to work, because you fundamentally don't affect the car. You don't, you're not putting the weight in that will change the brakes or anything like that. Obviously the BOP will, but if you've got a car that was formerly high on BOP and then you're putting lead in it for a success penalty as well, suddenly the car is carrying a lot more than it's probably been designed to carry. So you fundamentally get a completely different car, one that falls entirely out the windows of its tire performances, brake performances, engine performance. everything. So, I mean, there have been, you know, British GT is usually always the kind of first thing that finds the flaw. And we've seen that at Alton Park before with various rules and bits like that that need to be tested or polished out. But they always have been polished out. And I think we're kind of seeing that finished, polished championship product now. I just think, you know, it's a great package. I'm a big advocate of it. It's hugely professional, more professional than some of the European series that I've been and seen. A British GT paddock is, you know, it's an amazing place with the hospitalities and the huge trucks, and you know, it's gone beyond dad and lad bring a trailer, which in many ways is a fantastic thing. In other ways, can it put some people off? Quite possibly. If you feel that you need to, you know, as an amateur GT3 driver, if you feel that you need to spend a huge amount of money to have a factory-backed pro alongside you to have any chance, it's a fine balance. It is a fine balance. But, you know, as we've seen this year, Jules Gounon and Raffaele Marchiello have not won every race.
Yeah.
They've won one each, I believe. And other than that, because of the way the championship's balanced, it seems to work. You know, you've got you do have a Lamborghini up there. You do have the Mercedes up there. You've got the McLarens up there. The Aston has gone very well this year. The BMW's gone fantastically with Darren Leung and Dan Harper. So yeah, I mean, you know, it's hard to come into a race weekend and pick a winner, know exactly who's going to do what.
And that's the best way, 100%.
Yeah, well, quite.
Unlike Formula One, yeah. Just saying.
Are you telling me Max Verstappen's odds are getting longer by the day?
Let's just put it this way: I'm glad I didn't bother wasting my money on the bet on him winning again this year. It's a good thing quite I like the guy, but you know,
quite a sensation, though. You know,
oh,
I mean,
100%.
Formula One is massively cyclic. You have this kind of period of dominance, and you see it ever since, you know, the Senna years, the McLaren years, the Schumacher years, when Prost won it. You know, you see these eras where someone just gets it right and it just completely clicks.
Yeah.
And in the time, I find this quite interesting, actually, in the kind of psychology of the sport, because in the time when those drivers are winning, and this is fueled by social media, I believe, quite a lot of the time they're the enemy. They're accused of killing the sport. They're unpopular. Don't get me wrong, there are sections out there that will still say, you know, these drivers are amazing. Come on, guys. Like, this is history in the making. History and record-breaking achievements. But you do get that kind of fatigue with it, where you go, oh, has Max won it again? Oh, great. Yeah, brilliant. Well done him. Well, actually, yeah, well done him. Yeah, because it's only when he retires and leaves, and in 10 years' time, people will be writing books about his greatness and how they wish that they'd seen those years. I mean, it's like that amazing McLaren season where they won every single race barring one. To actually have been in the paddock during that weekend must have been pretty much the exact same thing that we've got now. But we look back on that now and we appreciate the car and we appreciate the drivers. And we point fingers at the fact that Ferrari were the only other team to win a race and they just so happened to win the Italian Grand Prix. We look at these things.
Yeah.
And it's in a completely different light now. So I do think it's one of those things where these drivers tend to be most respected or most loved when they've stopped or when they're not winning. Same with Vettel.
Yeah, 100%. He was, I wouldn't say he was enemy number one for me, but he wasn't Jenson Button. And then when he was winning all the time, he has that, and I think I said this about Michael Schumacher as well, when they were winning and he was winning all the time, you had that killer mentality and the personality doesn't show through because it's weakness or whatever. And you know, you have to be away to win as much as they do, blah, blah, blah. And then like either they go away or they have that epiphany that they've won everything that needed to win. Now I'm just going to chill out and enjoy myself. And you go, geez, he's actually a really nice bloke. And Vettel, I've got all the time in the world for. He's top for what he's getting his hands into these days.
It's an amazing turnaround, though, isn't it? From the young kid that was getting booed left, right and centre for doing pretty much exactly what Max is doing now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, speaking of sensations, I can't really talk to someone who's got links with the SRO not talk about a certain particular Italian driver. The Rossi effect.
Oh, I thought you were going for Fisichella.
I'm sure I can think of a pun somewhere, but not right
the
now.
Rossi effect, yes.
The Rossi effect. I mean, I was lucky enough to be there at Brands, and I saw on the I saw on the banks the Rossi effect in the UK, and I have absolutely no doubt that at Misano is exactly the same, if not more so.
Oh, there is no place like Misano when Valentino Rossi is in a car. Fred Vavish has never been more popular than Misano alongside Valentino Rossi.
But, I mean, and you hate to... I mean, I think it's safe to say MotoGP over the course of 20-plus years heavily benefited off of his brand, air quotes, eventually. Obviously not in the early years when he was just kind of, you know, another motorcyclist on the track, just happened to be doing quite well. Do we think that might end up happening for GT Racing and Rossi, or do we think this is his stepping stone, we benefit from it while we can, and BMW have got bigger plans in store for him?
Well, I think to many extent it's already happened. In the fact that if you've been to any of the GT World Challenge events for the last 2 years, the buzz around the paddock, just around the WRT garages, is quite phenomenal. It is. I've never seen one guy so adored. It's difficult to think that if Lewis Hamilton jumped into a GT3 car in the same way, he would have anywhere near the same kind of... I don't know. It's just sheer adoration that they have, that these fans around Europe have for Rossi. I mean, Misano was incredible last year. I missed this year's one because it was a Sprint Cup round. But I was there with the European GT4 last year. And every single time that Valle Yellow Audi, as it was then with Vivian,
yeah,
went past the grandstand, there was a Mexican wave that followed the car down the thing. And it didn't matter if Rossi was not in it. This is why I say that Fred Vavish has never known himself so popular, because you could see him holding his hand up and they're like, we don't care, it's Rossi's car. Yeah. And the noise, the cheers and things like that, especially around Misano, and when he won at Misano, where he wins his first race. And it's full credit to Valentino. You know, he could have gone off and done a lower level championship to try and learn GT racing, because it's massive, massively, massively different from what he's been doing. But the fact that he jumped in at the highest level you can in GT racing, you know, grids of 55, 65 cars at Spa, and put himself firmly in the spotlight. And we've seen him miss his pit box.
Yeah,
I believe that happened at Imola, first GT3 race. That's quite embarrassing.
Yes, I remember that.
We've seen him put it in the gravel, and he's there with his airs and graces, just showing the world that he is human. You know, he does make mistakes. He's learning all over again, but he's doing it constantly with a smile on his face. I've never heard him complain ever about anything. And he takes the time. He comes out of the back of the garages and he signs. He signs your hat. He signs your program. He'll sign your sister. He'll sign your baby if you asked him to. You know, he's a wonderful bloke. He really is. And his merchandise stand is the biggest one there. Never mind the championship merchandise. I mean, if you want a dog collar with VR46 on it, he sells it. It's unbelievable. So
ideas.
Yeah, the sheer effect that he has had has been overwhelmingly positive, and it's great to see him up at the sharp end. He needs a little bit more luck in the endurance stuff, because again, that's a different ball game from driving 20-25 minutes to suddenly driving 3 or 4 hours. It's been great to have him as part of the championship. I have no idea quite what's next. Hopefully he will stick around. You know, there are possibilities to do both of these things. So if he does go off and do Le Mans with BMW, whether that's hypercar or whether that's in GT, absolute best of luck with him. Because actually having Valentino Rossi at Le Mans, it'd be a phenomenal thing for Le Mans. I mean, again, it would just be the cherry on top of an already amazing event. Because during any of the fan events at Spa, he's cheered like a god. He really is. Mm. It's brilliant to see. Brings a whole new dimension to it.
Oh God, I love GT racing. And more to the point, I'm very glad that Valet does as well.
Yeah, it's quite.
It's nice that we all have one thing in common with Valentino Rossi. We all love GT racing.
Quite exactly.
I wish I had the skill, but you know, anyway, I could dream. Rob, thank you ever so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you again. It's been well overdue.
Hey, you're more than welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Stephen, we're going to jump to some actual sim racing news. Of course, Rob can hang around and jump in as he likes, because I'm sure he'll have a couple of thoughts on some of the bits of content that we have coming. Well, maybe one bit of the content that we have coming up for iRacing Season 4 is just around the corner. And what have we got coming up, Steve?
We have...
Rifles through the menu.
Just listening to Rob, and I'm blown away by the passion that you have on for motorsport and just generally in GT. It's just
oh, thanks very much.
Amazing. Genuinely, it's amazing to listen to. But moving on to sim racing, iRacing Season 4. We have a Porsche. Now I know why Matt has put me on this.
There we go. We seem straight back onto GTs.
There we go.
We have a Porsche 963. I'm really happy. Now I know exactly why you've put me on this. There is Stuttgart for me to talk about. They haven't. So this car, we were speculating this car was coming for a long while.
Months ago, yeah. Mm.
With the JDC or JEM. I can't remember what their car, that yellow one in IMSA.
JDC, isn't it?
There we are. Yes, we were speculating that for ages.
That's right, because they debuted their livery on it.
They did. And we were like, what game is it on? What is it on?
Well remembered, sir. Well remembered.
Thank you. I do listen and I do remember things. So, but yeah, so they've got the Porsche 963. The Pontiac
looks good in yellow too.
It will look good in yellow.
It does look good in yellow, that car.
It'll look even better in gold.
It's not quite Jota Hertz gold, is it? But it's up there.
Yeah, yeah.
they've got the Pontiac Grand Prix NASCAR. That's way before my time. That's 1987. Is that the one that like takes off if it does random things on a NASCAR circuit? If I remember,
it's a NASCAR. Of course, it'll take off.
It will cost it.
They still do that.
We are given the Kern County Raceway Park. That sounds like an oval with four configurations.
It's two ovals. It's a dirt oval and it's a tarmac oval.
Ah.
An asphalt oval for those in the States.
And we have Zandvoort, an updated layout. So I'm going to have the guess we have more banking, an extra degree of banking.
I don't know how I feel about Zandvoort. It's not really a circuit I've got on with.
Great to go to, but I did go pre-banking, which you've got to be very careful at saying on a podcast. That's a dangerous phrase.
The only thing I remember about Zandvoort was watching a DTM race many, many years ago when Peter Dumbreck was in an Opel and he came out the final corner, hit the wall on the outside, and the car just disintegrated into nothing. And I'm pretty certain he was perfectly okay. I just remember thinking, I never want to see this circuit again. It's far too dangerous. Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think Danny Ricciardo's a particular fan of it either now, but...
You weren't watching that Le Mans when Peter Dumbreck had his moment as well, were you? Is it you?
Jeez, I don't know. I was watching the Valencia race when Mark Webber did it. Awkward. Oh. We have also recently just had announced, well, I say announced, leaked, Super Formulas come in as well, which I think, well, I know Jordan, dear Jordan, will be extremely excited that Super Formula is coming to iRacing. That came out of left field. I was totally not expecting that. And we've also had the Acura GTP teased before under a thing. He said under a duvet. That is dodgy. We didn't know what it was, but it has turned out to be the Acura. So
great looking car, that.
It is. It's a shame that the Alpine looks like it. Just my personal opinion.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, and there was something else that got a photo that got photoed that the guy said, oh no, it was just that Super Formula in the
How many are we up to in the GTP iRacing
route? We will have four.
Four. So is that Cadillac, the BMW, the Porsche, the Acura?
Yes.
It is. So what have we got left to do?
What, GTPs?
Yeah. I can't remember now.
I don't know the difference between them anymore. Because I went, it's the Lamborghini. And I got told, the Lamborghini's not doing GTP. It's like, well, they are doing GTP, but they're also doing the WEC. And I said, oh, maybe it's the Ferrari, it's not the Ferrari, because the Ferrari's not doing GTP, they're doing the WEC. Oh, they are doing the WEC, and they are doing IMSA. Goodness sake. Stupid class structure.
I think you have got them all there so far.
Yeah.
With the four, I think you've got, barring the kind of brand new ones that are around.
Let's face it, we're never getting the Glickenhaus.
No.
So I'm not too worried about that.
What about the van wall?
Oh, that'll be on fire.
If someone hasn't done a fire mod for that car in our factory, I'd be very surprised.
As soon as you go out of pit lane, you go like a third of the way down the track, it all of a sudden gets a puncture, and then you're like, oh, back to pit lane. That's the van wall mod.
Catches fire on the warm-up lap. A la 2017. Just very quickly as well, there's just been announced... FIA F4 Esports Regional Tour is coming to iRacing. So the FIA are teaming up with iRacing to produce races in two European regions, America and Asia/Pacific. Because geographical reasons, one assumes. Each region will have circuits that match the nations included. Anyone can enter under any geographic area. So if you want to race on the Australian tracks or the Asian tracks, I don't know why I did an Australian accent. I just felt like it for a change.
It's very colourful.
Sorry, Krailsy. Races will be held on Wednesdays and Thursdays across the season at 7 PM, 9 PM, and 11 PM for each region. That's very accommodating. And they'll be using F4 car, obviously, which has been renamed from the Formula IR04 to the FIA F4. Motorsport doesn't do itself any favours with nomenclature, does it?
We love an acronym.
what is this class? Well, let's have an algebraic to the power of 2. That's your class.
Okay. Well, it really is. And just very, very quickly before we go, just a security point, security watch. I would have the Crime Watch theme tune on here, but I don't.
I'm going to say you really need some kind of siren or alarm here.
The Bill music or something like that.
Yeah.
Something that we can actually use that's old enough. Trading paint. So if you are on iRacing and you have bespoke liveries, chances are you use trading paints to upload it. Masantro on X very helpfully put out the other day on August 27th was when this happened, 28th was when it was found out and posted about. Someone has leaked 270,000 users with MD5 hashed passwords from Trading Paints. It's strongly advised that if you have a Trading Paints account, change your password ASAP. If you use the same password for other sites, please try and change it as well. That's obviously a very, very serious issue. I don't believe Trading Paints have actually made any comment yet. But of course, please do check all relevant social media accounts for that, those sort of details, to find out more, just to make yourself safe as soon as you possibly can. And that's the end of the show. Once again, Rob, thank you ever so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure talking GT racing.
Oh, you're more than welcome. I think it's been the least simmy simcast going.
I don't care.
I apologise to the audience.
It's what Ben's here for. Ben does it. Everybody knows, if you want to know the actual news, you go to Ben's show. If you want entertainment, it's entertainment over information on this show. So if you want entertainment, you come to this show. Everybody knows it. I've been Matt Hunter. Steve has been around. And Rob has been an absolute fantastic guest. Thank you ever so much for listening, everybody. See you in a couple of weeks' time. Ben will be back next week, probably with Lewis if he hasn't blown away. Bye-bye for now.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, subscribe to the Simcast wherever you get your podcasts.